The viewpoints expressed on Liberty Works Radio Network are not necessarily those of the network, its affiliates, or sponsors. This is Liberty Works Radio Network. Now live from coast to coast and around the globe. More real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. My name is Joe Bannister, your host. It's Saturday, October 3rd, 2009, and I'm thrilled to be with you today. Good morning to my friends in Florida listening on the Eagle 104.3 FM, and good morning to my friends listening on the web at lwrn.net. Well, given the many blessings that God has bestowed on our country, I dedicate every show to our Father in heaven. So I always start the show by praying as Jesus instructed us in Matthew chapter 6. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Amen. Well, our country is in deep trouble, and I urge everyone to fervently pray for God's blessings on our country. Let's redouble our efforts to obey His commandments, especially refraining from taking the Lord's name in vain. And I'm coming to you live, courtesy of Liberty Works Radio Network. The network is called Liberty Works, but it works best if we all work together to protect our liberty. And we really need your help to keep Liberty Works Radio Network on the air, so please visit lwrn.net and click on the Join Donate button. And I always encourage my listeners to have a pen and some paper ready, or if you're at your computer, get your word processor ready to go. We like to give important information to you all, and today should be no exception. For those who are new to the show, I'm a former IRS Criminal Investigation Division special agent, and I no longer work for the IRS because during the last 2 years of my service there, I investigated the claims and research others had performed about the legality of IRS administration and enforcement of the federal income tax system, and I concluded that the claims they made about the federal income tax were largely true. And coming to this conclusion obviously caused my IRS career to end rather abruptly in 1999. I could no longer perform the duties of that job, given what I had learned about the income tax and the IRS's conduct as an agency. So I left there in February of 1999, and I've been speaking about federal income tax issues and liberty-related matters ever since. I'm featured in a movie called America, Freedom to Fascism, which I highly recommend watching as soon as possible. You can go to any search engine and type in America, Freedom to Fascism, or you can go to freedomtofascism.com. And fascism is spelled F-A-S-C-I-S-M. I encounter people now and then who don't recall how to spell fascism. So freedomtofascism.com, or type in Freedom to Fascism into any search engine. Well, speaking of IRS tyranny and government tyranny, I'm very happy to welcome to the show attorney Jeffrey Dickstein. And I've had Jeff on now and then. He's represented people over the years, defendants, including myself. Jeff was my defense attorney, or lead defense attorney, along with Robert Bernhoft and Robert Barnes. Jeff has defended some of the most incredible cases, at least in my mind, tax cases. Well-known cases, Franklin Sanders from Tennessee, my own case, and of course the most recent case, and probably really the most important in my mind, is the Bill Benson case. So first off, Jeff, welcome to the show.
Hi, Joe. How you doing today?
Excellent. Thanks very much for coming on. Kind of difficult sometimes to get people to be available on a Saturday morning. I don't blame them at all. So
it is pretty early, especially out where you are.
Yeah, Pacific time. So anyway, so thank you for coming on. Why don't you start, first off, I don't know if you saw my email there, but you know, as far as our breaks, you won't be hearing the bumper music, so I may have to just step on you if we're getting close to a break. The segments run about 12 to 14 minutes, so, and I've already stepped over probably half of that for this one. But go ahead and tell the listeners about yourself, so they get a little, you know, get to know you a little bit more, and then they'll understand what kind of a gladiator you really are.
Well, let's see. I'm 61 years old. I've been practicing law since 1976. Been representing almost exclusively people that the government has classified as tax protesters since the I started researching in the late 70s. Devoted my practice almost exclusively to that, starting in around 80 or 81. Currently have the distinction of having won more federal criminal tax cases than any lawyer in the world. Not that that couldn't change, but so far that's my distinction. And after studying these issues, I just realized that something was terribly wrong in the United States. I started getting a hint of that while I was working for a law firm in Hollywood, California. Seemed like the law just wasn't implemented in accordance to how it was written, and there's a lot of politics involved in the law. In fact, it's mostly political. The law will change depending on the politics and the social mood of the country, and I have a problem with that. I think the law should change when Congress changes the law, and not when judges decide they don't like the law, and so they have it mean something other than it, what it says. And that's been the constant struggle for the vast majority of my legal career.
Some listeners like to actually look up things while the guest is on the air, so maybe we'll start out and, you know, say it throughout the show, but your website, so that people can go there.
My website is http://// Jeff Dickstein, JeffDickstein.com.
Okay, great. Well, can you tell the listeners, Jeff, maybe let's start in the early days. You know, I've become friends with Franklin Sanders as well. He was another shoulder to cry on during my you know, the upcoming months to my trial and during my trial, he having gone through that himself. But what can you tell us about the Franklin Sanders trial, just to give listeners an idea of, you know, what the Department of Justice and the IRS will try to do to people?
Well, way back when, people started creating what was known as warehouse banks, and it was actually a grassroots protest against the Federal Reserve System. And the way the warehouse banks worked was people would take their paychecks and send it to warehouse bank owners. In this case, Franklin Sanders and his partner Michael Osborne owned a warehouse bank. And they would take the paycheck and buy gold or silver with it, store it in a warehouse, and then issue a gold or silver certificate representing how much gold and silver you had. And they would keep the gold and silver there until such time as you wanted to pay a bill, and then they would do one of two things. If it was another warehouse bank member, they would just change the certificates to reflect the payment of, you know, so much of what was on being warehoused to the other party. Or if it was to someone not involved in the warehouse bank, they would sell just as much of the gold and silver necessary to pay the bill. And they would actually do that. And so the IRS came in and decided that whole thing constituted a conspiracy and was part of a massive scheme to commit income tax evasion. And they sued Franklin and Michael and 20, I think it was about 21 other defendants in a massive criminal conspiracy case that took place in Memphis, Tennessee. And we had 12 attorneys, I think maybe eight or nine of them were public defenders. Larry Beecraft was involved, great patriot lawyer. Michael Siebert was involved, a lot of public defenders, and then several of the people represented themselves. A couple of people pled guilty before trial, and 18 actually went to trial. One pled guilty to a misdemeanor after the government rested their case. It was the wife of one of the defendants, had young children at home, so she pled guilty to a misdemeanor under the promise of no jail time. And then the remaining 17 finished the trial and the case went to the jury. We got 17, all 17 were found not guilty on 51 related felonies. The trial lasted about 4.5 months. A lot of things happened during the trial which were interesting, but that was the longest trial I did, and we were all pretty happy that we got the not guilty verdicts. If you get a chance to educate the jury long enough, which requires a longer trial, you can teach them a lot, despite the fact that the judge consistently interrupted and refused to let us do the case the way we wanted to, but nonetheless we had enough time to convince the jury that, you know, there's a serious issue with the income tax and you shouldn't be putting people in jail because they've taken the time to read the law and understand what it says.
So did the transactions that occurred in this warehouse bank, I mean, was it similar to my trial in that they were hoping they'd throw a bunch of stuff up on the wall and it would stick, but evidence of actual agreements between the participants and, you know, trying to get one over on the IRS, and I imagine that just wasn't there. I mean, they were trying to simply do banking in a legal manner, and the IRS tried to claim that somehow it was this grand scheme to avoid paying income tax.
Yeah, what they did is, the IRS isn't afraid of the letters that people write to the IRS. If you write a letter to the IRS setting forth what you believe, they introduce that into evidence to establish that you're willful. Because, of course, everybody on the jury knows that you have to pay taxes. And that's what they basically rely on. And at one point in the trial, they called a dentist, who was one of the guys who had pled guilty, and part of his plea bargain was that he had to testify against the other defendants. So he got up on the stand, and he was pretty hostile for a while. And they introduced three letters that he had written. And while the judge wouldn't let me read from two of those letters, even though she let the government read from those letters, by the third letter, she realized that the jury was having a considerable problem with her not letting us do what the government did. And so she let us read from the letter, and I started to cross-examine the doctor. And as we went through his letter, the old feelings came back to him, and he ended up, after 2.5 hours of being our star witness. And now in that case, the jury had heard the actual statutes and what they meant, and they were able to see that the people on trial actually had a sound basis for their beliefs. And if you have a sound basis for your belief, if you don't believe you're violating the law, you're not a criminal, at least in tax cases. In tax cases, you have to have a specific mental intent to violate the law. And if you believe you're conforming to the law, then obviously you don't have that mental intent. That's ultimately what the jury decided.
I see. Well, we do have a break coming up. Our guest is attorney Jeffrey Dickstein. Thank him for joining us on a Saturday morning. And we'll continue talking about the amazing cases that he's defended in the past. Thanks for joining us.
born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Mother Teresa couldn't do it all, but she gave it all. Compassion. She didn't just visit the sick and poor. She moved in with them because they needed help. Mother Teresa couldn't do it all, but she gave it all. Compassion. Pass it on.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
It's the truth that no one else will say on the radio.
The philosophy of Barack Obama is predicated on one simple notion, and that's that it's okay to take from one person to give to another.
It's okay to take from one person to give to another.
He's the evil conservative saying what America's thinking.
Barney Frank, Tim Geithner, Barack Obama, Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid. I want to know who's controlling these Muppets. Who's controlling these Muppets?
To power.
It's the truth that no one else will say on the radio.
Only one man can do it, the evil conservative.
Listen, it'd be really easy to get rid of all the questions. Just show us the birth certificate.
He's the evil conservative.
Listen, sometimes somebody just has to say, it's an ugly baby.
Get it right. Yet, the evil truth. The evil conservative saying what America's thinking.
Weeknights at 10 on Liberty Works Radio Network.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network.
There's a reason education is because the owners of this country don't want that. I'm talking about the real owners now. It's the big wealthy business interests that control things and make all the important decisions. Forget the politicians. They're irrelevant. The politicians are put there to give you the idea that you have freedom of choice. You don't. You have no choice. You have owners. They own you. They own everything. They own all the important land. They own and control the corporations. They've long since bought and paid for the Senate, the Congress, the state houses, the city halls. They got the judges in their back pockets. And they own all the big media companies, so they control just about all the news and information you get to hear. They got you by the they spend billions of dollars every year lobbying to get what they want. Well, we know what they want. They want more for themselves and less for everybody else. But I'll tell you what they don't want. They don't want a population of citizens capable of critical thinking. They don't want well-informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking. They're not interested in that. That doesn't help them. That's against their interest. That's right. You know something? They don't want people who are smart enough to sit around the kitchen table and figure out how badly they get by a system that threw them overboard. Want that. You know what they want? They want obedient workers. Obedient workers. People who are just smart enough to run the machines and do the paperwork and just dumb enough to passively accept all these increasingly jobs with the lower pay, the longer hours, the reduced benefits, the end of overtime, and the vanishing pension that disappears the minute you go to collect it. And now they're coming for your Social Security money. They want your retirement money. They want it back. So they can give it to their criminal friends on Wall Street.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
In 1987, some inner-city first graders were promised a college education. Now, this promise didn't come from a wealthy corporation. It came from Laura Lee Brown, who saved a large portion of her modest income every year for these children.
Well, Ms. Brown, you can't do everything I asked to know, but we need to do more.
And she did more by sending 19 kids to college, helping others pass it on.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting. now live from coast to coast and around the globe. More real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. My name is Joe Bannister, your host. We're talking this morning with attorney Jeffrey Dickstein, and he was going back through some of the cases that he's defended in the past. We're talking about the Franklin Sanders and Michael Osborne case, where there were 21 or so defendants, and 17 of them
ended up going to trial. And so Jeff was talking about that whole ordeal. Tell me about the prosecutors, Jeff. I certainly haven't gone through this myself. Do they really try to make this group of people out to be bad guys, but they must have really fell on their face, huh?
Yeah, it was a pretty devastating loss for them. Typically what happens at tax trials is you do the trial, and then when the jury goes out and comes back with the verdict, the courtroom fills up, and it's mostly government people, all the IRS agents from behind the scenes, all of the other prosecutors in the office, they all show up. And as the verdicts of not guilty started to be read, it was like rats deserting a sinking ship. Slowly but surely, they all started getting up and walking out. So, you know, when there were maybe 60 people in the courtroom for the start of reading the verdicts, by the time it was done, you know, there were maybe two or three government personnel left. It was great to watch.
Well, and you sure earned it. I mean, how many months did you say the trial lasted?
Probably about 4.5 months.
And you, your father became ill, and Eon passed away during the trial?
Yeah, he actually died during the trial. And the court offered us the opportunity to do a recess so I could go to the funeral, but the trial had already been dragging on, and a lot of people's lives were involved, and I just figured I could better serve Dad and the clients by staying there, so I did.
Wow. I mean, and that, you know, being, having been able to meet you and work with you, I can see that dedication in you, and thanks be to God that we have people like Jeff Dickstein out there to help us to communicate our innocence. So you did say before the break that the government, you know, they tend to, just the fact that they've charged you, and even though they're supposed to tell the jury, aren't they, that, oh, just because the person has been charged, you know, they have a presumption of innocence, but isn't there really an indirect message being sent that, these people must be guilty just because they've been charged, and then when they use the word conspiracy, that has a tendency to paint someone as somehow evil and a schemer?
Well, I think it's just a natural tendency of people in general to have a a good faith belief that the government is honorable. I mean, if you have a problem with the government, you might be considered to be unpatriotic. And so the government can do no wrong. And yeah, they think if you're charged, of course you're guilty. They wouldn't have charged you otherwise. And while the judge does tell the jury that the indictment is just a charge and it doesn't prove guilt, it's always an uphill battle. Our system is set up to where you're presumed innocent until proven guilty. But in reality, my experience is you have to prove you're innocent, or you will be found guilty.
And I can say that's certainly become my experience, that you really need to have someone who can communicate your innocence, and that's that's an art. It takes a great deal of experience, and knowing how the federal court arena works, because as I learned, it's such an incredibly controlled environment, and that judge, you know, who's supposed to be a neutral arbiter, at least in my case, I mean, as I recall, I was quite happy to see that you had the experience, along with Bob Bernhoff, to basically box in the judge to make sure that he did what he was supposed to do. Did you have that experience at all in the Franklin Sanders case, where you were able to strategize in a way to prevent the judge from getting on the prosecutor's side?
There was a female prosecutor in that case, and whenever she had a problem with how the case was going, she would nod her head and the judge would pop up and stop the proceedings and change what was going on, you know. And I called them on it during the trial. She came real close to holding me in contempt a couple of times. But ultimately, I can't say reason prevailed, because I don't think they're reasonable people. That the judges are very aware of the power they have over the jury. And you can't be arguing with the judge, because then you look bad. And so no matter what roadblocks the judge puts up or the prosecution puts up through their objections, you have to be adept at weaving a trail to get to the same point some other way. So you might go down one road and they'll object. That's like a big roadblock, so you can't get through. So you have to back up and take another road. But the goal is to ultimately get your point across to the jury, and you have to do it in such a way that they don't see it coming. So you might back off for a while and go down another road, and they think you're doing something else, and then bam, you bring it right back to where you wanted to go in the first place, and now they can't object because they've allowed all the underlying stuff. It is an art form. It's a lot like playing chess, only in this game of chess, the rules change. If you start winning the game too well, they'll change the rules on you on the spot. And so you have to be quick enough to get around that and find another way to get to where you want to go.
Other than that challenge of getting to where you want to go, can you remember any other specific real big hurdles, things that just frustrated you, or you wondered somehow, wow, how did we get through that?
Well, the biggest thing was the government introduced letters that these people had written into evidence, and they got to read from those letters. And those letters actually cited the statutes that the clients had relied upon, 6001, 6011, 6012, the definition of income at 61, and those were actually in the letters. So we put the letters up on the big screen and flashed that up to show the statute, and the government would object, saying, well, we can't testify as to what the law is because the judge will instruct on the law. That's a typical thing that they do, is they keep the law from the jury. But the letters were already in evidence, so it was going to the jurors anyway. At the end of the trial, they just wouldn't let us talk about it, and they submitted three different letters, and each letter had the same statutes in it, and it was real frustrating that the judge wouldn't let me go over the evidence with the jury. That's how desperate they are to get wins. Even though we have evidence that's admitted evidence, you still can't discuss it in front of the jury. And that was just an incredibly frustrating experience.
Because they're afraid the jury would perceive some credibility in as you describe it. Because otherwise, all they hear is the judge telling them this is the law, rather than at least being able to hear another perspective. And isn't it true that, in fact, for the jury to hear the whole truth, they have to know what was in the mind, at least indirectly, what was in the mind of the defendant, do they not?
Right, and what better evidence of what's on the defendant's mind than what they commit to writing and send to the government?
Well, I guess I mean, I love talking about the Franklin Sanders case because, I mean, Franklin, as I mentioned, he got in touch with me many months prior to my own trial and was able to, you know, just talk with me about it, and it really was helpful to hear, you know, from someone that had been through a similar situation, although I looked at his as much worse than mine.
Well, you just can't... you can't describe to someone what it's like to be a defendant in a federal court of law. I mean, no matter how much you talk about it, people just don't get it until they experience it. But having been there for a really long time, you know, I'm sure Franklin's advice to you was invaluable.
It most definitely was. I mean, it just it came at a time when it was needed, and it stayed. You know, he would call me every so often, and even though I didn't really want to call him and bother him, but he'd just call me. You know, he must have known that you know, those thoughts of apprehension come along, and so it was just, it's great. You know, when we all try to stick together. But to kind of dovetail then into my case a little bit, or at least when you mentioned about those letters and as a tool to find out what was really going on in the defendant's mind, in my case, I amazingly had a videotape that Al Thompson decided to film the entire presentation that I made. Back at the time that the government claimed that I was, you know, concocting these conspiracies, and why don't you tell the listeners about that whole thing with the tape?
Well, yeah, the tape was great, and the reason the tape was great, and as you'll recall, we spent numerous hours of me convincing you I didn't want you to take the stand. The tape depicted you in such a manner that everybody could see you were just expressing an opinion. You weren't telling anybody what to do. You were just going over your research. And what the government likes to do when a defendant testifies is they'll come into court with all of the case law, because, you know, people study the law when they decide that the law doesn't apply to them. And so what the government likes to do is bring in all of the law that says you're wrong. And then you can't tell the jury that that law is wrong, because that's what the judge has said, and juries have a lot of respect. So you were given your perspective on what the law said and who it applied to. And then the government had a whole stack of stuff that they were going to use to cross-examine you when you took the stand. Well, after we played the tape, I think we submitted one document into evidence. We didn't call any witnesses, and we rested, much to the shock of everybody, including the judge. And by resting, we precluded the government having any opportunity to cross-examine you. If you didn't take the stand, they couldn't call you to the stand. And so the videotape was the best evidence of what was on your state of mind and what you believed. Your testimony couldn't have been any better than that tape. I mean, you were really in the zone when you were talking to the employees of CenCal, which was the business that Al Thompson owned. And so for me, that was the absolute most perfect testimony that could have been given. So we didn't put you on the stand, we rested, and the government didn't have anywhere to go. And I think that was a major turning point in your case, other than the jury instruction fiasco, where the government just refused to acknowledge what the jury instructions had to be based on the indictment. And I'll never forget the judge turning to the prosecutor, Twist, and he chewed him out for 40 minutes because he knew the government had lost the case. Everyone in the courtroom knew the government had lost the case. I mean, there was a huge buzz going through the courtroom about how well the defense was going.
Jeff, we got a break here coming up. We'll be right back with Attorney Jeff Dickstein. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in Broadcasting.
She knows a hollow from a double up. She does snapbacks, backsides, shoots the curl. Bethany Hamilton knows everything about surfing. She just didn't know about the shark. But just months after the attack, and with only one arm, the 13-year-old surfs again. And now she's ripping it better than ever. So next time life puts a little fear in you, just think of Bethany Hamilton hanging 10 on top of a heavy wave. That's real courage. Pass it on.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in Broadcasting.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in Broadcasting.
The American dream was given birth by Samuel Adams, the father of the American Revolution. The right to freedom, being the gift of God. It is not in the power of man to alienate this gift and voluntarily become a slave. If ye love wealth better than liberty, the tranquility of servitude better than the animating contest of freedom, go home from us in peace. We ask not your counsels or your arms. Crouch down and lick the hands which feed you. Thomas Jefferson wrote to Sam the following tribute. You have proved that it was monarchy, and not merely British monarchy, you opposed. Samuel Adams was not only a son of liberty, he was the father of the American Revolution. For his was the American dream.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in Broadcasting.
Hey everybody, gather around. I'm here to give you anything you like. You want free college, energy, mortgages, whatever you like. You have come to the right place. Why? I'll tell you why. Who can take your money?
Who can take your money?
With a twinkle in their eye.
A twinkle in their eye.
Take it all away and give it to some other guy. The government.
The government.
The government can. Tax the sunrise.
Who can tax the sunrise?
Who can tax the trees?
Who can tax the trees?
Let you run a business and collect up all the fees. The government.
The government.
Oh, the government can.
The government can.
And the government can, cause they mix it up with lies and make it all taste good.
Make it all taste good.
The government takes everything we make to pay for all. Healthcare, climate change, pollution. Throw away the Constitution. And who can give a bailout?
Tell us to behave.
And make the founding fathers roll over in the grave. The government.
The government.
Oh, the government can.
The government can.
And the government.
Delicious.
Oh, who can be a failure?
Who can be a failure?
now live from coast to coast and around the globe. More real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, everyone.
Welcome back to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. My name is Joe Bannister, your host. You can go to freedomabovefortune.com and get more information about myself and the show. And our guest is attorney Jeffrey Dickstein. We had talked about the Franklin Sanders trial, where there were 21 some odd defendants, and 17 of them went to trial. And Jeff spearheaded the defense. As I recall, Jeff, there were just, I think you said, a dozen attorneys. And wasn't there a point at which the attorneys just said, you know, they saw you operating and thought, this guy knows how to shoot straight, let's let him do the shooting?
The turning point in that trial was when we had the dentist up on the stand, and we were starting to make the case. And the other lawyers, all of whom were public defenders and basically ignorant of the underlying issues, and therefore they didn't believe in any of them, they saw that it was starting to happen for us. And then the judge called me out. I had a kidney infection during the trial, and the day we were doing that, I had 102 fever and was in a significant amount of pain. And the judge started chewing me out big time. And then she called the recess after she chewed me out. And to a person, every defendant and every defense lawyer came over and gave me a big hug. And that was the event that changed the trial. At that point, everybody on the defense was a united front. And the big mistake the government had made is Larry and Beecraft had tried to represent everyone, and the government objected under conflict of interest rules. And so the judge had to appoint lawyers for the other defendants. So now there were 17 closing arguments, because each defendant gets to do a closing argument to the government's one. And 17 to 1 is good numbers. And so then each defense attorney gave a better close than the last one. I mean, it was hugely patriotic. It was hugely emotional. And the government just couldn't withstand that kind of pressure. So they actually sabotaged themselves by not letting Larry and I defend all the defendants. It worked out perfectly.
So once again, you turn lemons or lemonade from lemons. Now, and then backtracking or going to my case again, when you were talking about the tape, wasn't that a similar situation where the government, I should explain to the listeners who aren't aware, you know, I was indicted for conspiring to defraud the United States of America, and they it's a, you know, common charge, but it's a heavy charge. They make it look like you're literally a latter-day Al Capone. And so the government accused me of conspiring with a client, and they had a videotape, which I had filmed with the client's personnel, to explain my thoughts about the income tax and why I didn't work there as a special agent anymore. And so there was this two-hour videotape of my entire presentation. And, you know, at the time I said to my client, I don't mind being taped. You know, I'm not hiding from anybody. And so there was this tape, and the government, they really didn't have a whole lot to go on, so they thought that by showing this tape and claiming that it was the smoking gun of my, dastardly deeds, that, they'd have a great piece of evidence. But my demeanor, my explanations had the opposite effect on the jury.
But what happened in your case was you were charged together with your client, Al Thompson, and Al Thompson was considered to be a risk of flight, and he was incarcerated from the time of his arrest. Usually you get arrested, but you're out on bail pending the trial. Al was in jail and wanted to go to trial, and you showed up at our offices with, 20, 21 boxes of stuff that you had studied?
Yes.
And so I was able to get a severance of the trial because I needed time to go over your material and work with you, and Al wanted to go to trial. And so the government tried Al first, and we flew out to watch his trial. And in that trial, they decided not to put the tape into evidence, but Al got it into evidence, and they realized that was a huge mistake in front of the jury. So in your case, they put the tape into evidence. And so they couldn't actually object to the tape because they put it into evidence. And that tape is what showed you were innocent of the charges. It was great.
And as you mentioned, because it was a tape that couldn't be changed, I mean, what was taped is what was taped, but it was not subjected to any cross-examination. And, as you impressed upon me ever so much, they can make Mother Teresa look bad on cross-examination. They can turn you around and, blindfold you and turn you a dozen times until you don't know which way you're going. And you thought, rightly so, that it might be better to just avoid that whole conflict and simply let the government show their tape and let the jury, see my demeanor and, whether or not I really believe what I was saying.
You were hardcore. You wanted to take the stand. Would we spend maybe 6 hours that night convincing you not to go on the stand?
Well, it wasn't so much a convincing as it was the night before, and all those months, unless I was clueless, which you'd probably say that I was, but all those months in preparation, I always presumed that that was part of the repertoire, and you'd never said anything different, at least not outwardly. And it was literally the night before we were to put on our case when you guys sprung that on me, and maybe that was part of your strategy too. It's like, well, if we tell him in a late enough hour, he's gonna have to just listen to what we're saying. And I think that was my main issue with it, was just like, wow, really? You mean you really think we can still win without me getting up on the stand?
And it's not like that at all. Trials are living, breathing things, and you never know how it's going to go. But the way it was going was when I decided I didn't want you to be on the stand. I decided that day, and then we talked to you that night.
Oh, you know what? I didn't even know that. Here are the true confessions. So and it makes sense. I mean, as you say, it's just a constantly shifting sand there, and you're constantly trying to get a good foothold. And so it was literally earlier that day when you made the final decision that there's no need for Joe to get on the stand. We're better off if we just go with what we have.
Yeah. Trials are dynamic. They're constantly changing, and a lot of people think they can go into a courtroom and defend themselves, but it's not that way at all. It's a little bit like performing brain surgery on yourself. And I've been doing it long enough to where I just have a really good feel of what's going on. And you're constantly coming up with tactics and changing your tactics and modifying what you're going to do. It doesn't matter how well you have the case strategy planned out in advance, it's always subject to constant modification. If you don't modify, you lose.
Well, that is for sure. Let's see. We've got about 6 minutes left in this hour, and hoping you can at least come back for some of the second hour. But why don't we start to dovetail into your most recent effort? Although when I say recent, I mean you've been helping Bill Benson for a long time. But basically, for the listeners, there's a gentleman named Bill Benson, and years ago, back in the '80s, he wrote a book along with Red Beckman, called The Law That Never Was. And that book was based on Bill's research, whereby he had traveled to each of the 48 contiguous United States to look at the archives for each state. So going to the capital of each state and going to the, you know, the bowels of their records and looking to see whether or not the state had ratified the 16th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, frequently called the Income Tax Amendment. It's the amendment that ushered in the federal income tax system in 1913. And so Bill went around in person, physically, to each of the 48 contiguous United States capitals and researched what happened relating to the 16th Amendment. And he wrote a book with Red Beckman called The Law That Never Was, where he pointed out all of the egregious errors or just outright rejections of the 16th Amendment, contrary to what the Secretary of State back in 1913, Philander Knox, claimed was true. So Bill, just, you know, an incredible amount of research, all documented, all solid, and Jeff, I believe, Jeff, you did some representation of Bill, because Bill, having had this position and this research and information, he became a target of the IRS and the Department of Justice, which is all too common, and Jeff was at some point defending Bill from criminal charges, which, of course, the IRS likes to bring forward to destabilize you. But then more in recent years, here in the 21st century, Bill was accused of falsely telling the public that the 16th Amendment had never been ratified. So with just about 3 minutes left, Jeff, why don't you just give the listeners, from your perspective, of what this case is about, and then we'll spend the next hour talking in more detail about it.
Well, after Bill had done his research, several people relied on his research to pose a defense that they couldn't be guilty of tax evasion or failure to file because the income tax was unconstitutional in the absence of the 16th Amendment, which of course it would be. And the courts decided that this, rather than address the issues on the merits, and no one had actually accurately or sufficiently, in my opinion, presented it to the various courts. But the court said, hey, this is a political question. Congress is in control of whether an amendment is passed. We don't have jurisdiction to hear the issue. And therefore, there's a conclusive presumption that the 16th Amendment was ratified. And based on that conclusive presumption, no one can go into court and challenge the constitutionality of the income tax. And that was the status for a good 20-25 years. And so Bill said, okay, if that's your position, then the people need to exercise their rights under the First Amendment to talk about it and petition for redress of grievances in order to put political pressure on the government to hear the issue. And so he started selling his material over the internet in what he called the Reliance Defense Package. And it was starting to catch on, and so the government filed what they call an abusive tax shelter cause of action against Bill to get an injunction to prohibit him from selling his material. And to accomplish that, they have to establish that something Bill was saying about taxes was false. And so they allege that his statement that the 16th Amendment wasn't ratified was false. In other words, he had a false opinion, and it didn't conform to the government's ideology on the issue. And so they filed a lawsuit to enjoin him from telling people that the 16th Amendment wasn't ratified. And then they asked for the names of everybody who had purchased his program, they could be investigated by the IRS.
I see. Okay, well, we got the break coming up. Our guest is Attorney Jeffrey Dickstein. We'll be back in the second hour to discuss this in more detail. Thanks for joining us.
Join
Join the Cavalcade to Freedom. The Cavalcade back to constitutional government. Climb on board and do your part to proclaiming liberty throughout the land. Join and support Liberty Works Radio Network Fellowship. To view the strategic plan, to spread the word, and to get information on joining, go to www.libertyworksradionetwork.com or call the fellowship office at 410-857-5444. That's 410-857-5444 to join the Cavalcade to Freedom. America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Germany, Japan, and to a lesser extent Britain and Italy, lifted out of the debris of war by the Americans who poured in billions of dollars and forgave other billions in debt. None of those countries is today paying even the interest on its remaining debts to the United States. When the franc was in danger of collapsing in 1956, it was the Americans who propped it up. Their reward was to be insulted and swindled on the streets of Paris. And I was there.
The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Looking for a good way to help others who are helping others? Let the Eagle 104 advertise your ministry or service organization. Your gift will support this Faith and Freedom broadcast airtime costs at the same time. Come join this Faith and Freedom Given to Others advertising campaign. Contact me, David Allen Carmichael, toll-free, 888-850-1872 or online at faithfreedoms.org.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Shut Up is the central rationale behind the leftist program. We've heard it expanded upon recently by Democrat bigwigs who want to bring back some version of the misnamed fairness doctrine to try to knock guys off the air. But even if the left can't turn Shut Up into law, they've worked hard over the years to make it the custom of the country. It's the essence of politically correct phraseology and university speech codes. Say it our way or shut up. It's inherent in the media's demonization of conservative commentators, the way they try to turn names like Limbaugh and Ann Coulter into bywords for intolerance so they'll just shut up. And why were there more than half a dozen movies attacking the war on terror and not one in support of it? Oh, wait, I know. Shut up. The left here has been making the shut up argument at least since the 70s, when it became clear that all their other arguments had failed. Since it was the only argument remaining to them, they had to invent different ways to say it. If you pointed out that their weakness allowed the murderous tyranny of communism to expand, for instance, well, you were a McCarthyite. Shut up. If you proved that their leniency toward criminals turned our cities into cesspools, you were a fascist. Shut up. When you pointed out that their welfare policies destroyed black families and created a social disaster of vast proportions, you were a racist, a sexist, uncivil, worse than Hitler. All just different ways of saying, shut up. All around the world, leftism has failed everywhere. Shut up has been called to its defense. The full-blown leftists, communists, they shut up with prisons and guns. But the Western leftists, laboring under traditions of freedom, are suffering. In Europe, they've had more than 50 years of the sort of soft socialism the Democrats are now bringing here. Their anti-individualist, anti-religious, anti-patriotic policies have so sapped the energies of the European nations that the continent's once great cultures are now flaccid and passive, fit for nothing but to be conquered in slow motion by the violent, intolerant Islamist invader within. But when people like Ayn Hirsi Ali, Geert Wilders, or Oriana Fallaci have the temerity to decry the left's empowerment of Islamist hatefulness, they're the ones brought up on charges of being hateful. Not because they're speaking falsely, mind you, but because, shut up. So now, the left is in charge of America. And shut up is on the march. Watch for that fairness doctrine. Beware of net neutrality. Pay attention to the ways the liberal mainstream news media distort, mock, insult, and exclude the conservative opposition. Listen to the people they don't want you to listen to. Whatever you do, don't shut up. Don't shut up. Don't shut up.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. The viewpoints expressed on Liberty Works Radio Network are not necessarily those of the network, its affiliates, or sponsors. This is Liberty Works Radio Network. Now live from coast to coast and around the globe. More real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. My name is Joe Bannister, your host. Again, the website for more information about me and the last 10 years of my life since resigning from the IRS Criminal Investigation Division is freedomabovefortune.com. If you go to the additional information section of freedomabovefortune.com, got a section called mailing list. Feel free to join my mailing list. Go get some kind of a address from Google or Yahoo, and put some kind of a weird name in there and get on the list so you can see what happens in the future on the radio show and in my activism. Our guest is attorney Jeffrey Dickstein. He's thankfully given us his time here on this Saturday morning. And we were starting to get into the Bill Benson case. Jeff was explaining, I explained about Bill traveling to all 48 states, getting absolute solid evidence that the 16th Amendment had not been ratified or had been ratified fraudulently. And Bill, over the years, would tell people that. He would tell people that the 16th Amendment wasn't ratified. He'd give them proof. And some of those people used that information as a defense in their own lives. So the government claimed that Bill was lying about the lack of ratification of the 16th Amendment, and they do what they call a tax shelter, abusive tax shelter investigation. It's a civil matter rather than a criminal matter. So they basically sued, the Department of Justice sued Bill Benson to get a court to order Bill to stop talking about the 16th Amendment and the fact that it hadn't been ratified. So is that pretty accurate, Jeff?
You know, you have to wonder from time to time at the wisdom of some of these people that in the government. I mean, they really get cocky. Here for a number of years, they were able to have the issue be a non-issue because the courts, as I said before, decided they didn't have the authority to hear the issue. So rather than let sleeping dogs lie, they decide to get aggressive, and they reopened the issue by alleging Bill is making a false statement. Because what's the defense when you're accused of being a liar? Well, you come in with your evidence and say, I'm not lying. Here's the proof. Here's the truth. And because of the prior case law, I knew what the government was going to do was try to argue that this was a conclusive presumption. And so I argued to the court in a motion to dismiss. I said, look, you can't charge somebody with making false statements and then preclude them from having an ability to defend themselves. And so I told the court, if that's what you're planning on doing, you're going to be denying Bill due process of law, which in a nutshell, due process means you're entitled to a fair hearing in order to present your side of the case. So I argued the court would be without jurisdiction based on this prior case law. And the judge decided, no, I have jurisdiction to hear this case. So I said, great. So what we did is we went into court and submitted Bill's evidence. And that evidence is conclusive. I mean, no one can look at that evidence and come to the conclusion that the states actually ratified the 16th Amendment in accordance with the requirements of Article 5 of the Constitution, which is how amendments to the Constitution are made. So we submitted that evidence. The government realized that they were screwed. And so they filed a motion to dismiss the evidence on the grounds that it's irrelevant because the court doesn't have jurisdiction to hear the issue. And the court reversed its position beforehand, saying they did have jurisdiction, now saying they didn't have jurisdiction. And they struck Bill's evidence from the record, and then they found him guilty. Just incredible.
So, now, of course, you appealed that original ruling, correct?
Yeah, we went up to the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. And for the listeners that are interested, if you go to my website, jeffdickstein.com, right on the top of the first page, there's something called the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals page. It's a link. If you click on that and scroll down, you can actually listen to the oral argument that I made in front of the Seventh Circuit. It's pretty interesting. It's a real eye-opener to see how these judges think. So we did appeal it, and on the appeal, I raised a couple of issues. First issue was First Amendment issue. If, as the courts have said, this is a political question, which means the courts can't adjudicate the issue, well, when you talk about a political question, you're involved in political speech. And political speech is supposed to be 100% protected by the First Amendment. And then I argued that if you charge somebody with a crime, well, in this case, you're right, it was a civil action, but if you charge somebody with wrongful conduct, and then you refuse to listen to their evidence, then you've denied them due process. So we went up to the Seventh Circuit on First Amendment and due process grounds. And I raised eight specific issues on the appeal. The government didn't address seven of them, and the court didn't address seven of them. And they sustained the district court's finding that Bill was guilty.
And legally, is it correct that due process is something that you are entitled to, whether it's a civil accusation or a criminal accusation?
Oh, absolutely. It's the Fifth Amendment to our Bill of Rights.
So anytime it affects your life, liberty, or property, if the government's trying to relieve you of that or somehow affect that, then your due process rights kick in.
Right. It's the absolute right to have a fair hearing, a hearing in which you get notice of the charges, and then it's supposed to be tried in front of a judge who's neutral, and you have to have a hearing in which you're entitled to present a defense.
Now,
it's been the law in the United States since the beginning of the country.
I never asked you, and maybe it's really not relevant at this point, but having, again, experienced this part of it myself as well, after the Department of Justice and IRS were unsuccessful in getting me convicted for these ridiculous conspiracy charges that they hit me with, they claimed that I was promoting an abusive tax shelter by going out and speaking about my experiences.
Yeah.
And so there was a period of administrative inquiry where there's a revenue agent that's assigned, and they write letters and they go out and talk to people. Was there a point at which Bill was invited to come to a meeting and discuss with his agent, or did they just move directly to a court action against Bill?
They just moved directly to a court action.
So really, isn't there an administrative phase to due process also, where the agency is supposed to, in my case, although my case was criminal and Bill's is civil, of course, we scratch our heads and think, now, wait a second, if you'd really done an investigation here, you'd find out there weren't any charges that could really stick in a trial because there's no evidence of wrongdoing. Wouldn't the same kind of thing happen here? I mean, if the agent had really done a thorough investigation, they would see that, he actually had evidence to back up what he was saying.
Well, you sort of have to go back into history to understand what's going on. One of the major causes of the American Revolution was the fact that the king sent over a commissioner of tax and stamps, and the deal was is that they tried to pass a stamp tax act on newspapers, so that if you wanted to sell a newspaper, you had to go to the commissioner and apply, and then get a stamp, which means you paid the tax on your right to sell newspapers. And if the commissioner didn't like what the newspaper was printing, they would withhold the stamp. And it was actually a form of censorship through taxation. And that was the straw that broke the camel's back that actually led to the hostility in the American Revolution. Well, what they're doing with this abusive tax shelter is the exact same thing. They're using tax law to censor speech that the government doesn't like. So if you're critical of the government or something the government's doing, and in this case, Bill was alleging that the government committed fraud when they certified the 16th Amendment as being ratified. So they've gone back to tax law, in this case the abuse of tax shelter provisions, to censor and punish your right to speak. And so they're doing exactly what King George did back in the pre-revolutionary days. And so they don't much care about due process or following the administrative procedures or anything else. Their goal is absolutely 100% to squelch public debate on issues that are critical of government.
Now what?
And that's what this case is about. The Benson case is about your right to free speech. It's not just Bill's right, because who knows what, you know, what your issue is going to be that you have emotion about that you think is wrong and you want to take to the American public so they can consider it. And, you know, maybe you can convince them that you're right and they'll jump on the bandwagon. So it doesn't matter that Bill's case was about taxes and your case might be about abortion or gun control or government spending or the Federal Reserve System or Obama not being an American citizen, the war in Iraq. It doesn't matter anymore. If you're critical, they're going to try to silence you. And it's a significantly dangerous time in America now, as the government is openly and notoriously trashing the Constitution, particularly the First Amendment. And then when you add on that, okay, now we're going to accuse you of something, but we're not going to allow you to defend. Well, that's the end of freedom, as we know. That's the end. We're once again slaves.
And that's the critical, or one of the very critical issues that the listeners need to understand. This is something that directly affects each and every one of us, because each and every one of us is vulnerable to an accusation that we're, you know, not telling the truth. That's brought forward against us because the government doesn't like what we're saying. And, you know, as you mentioned before, there's plenty of topics that government officials don't like people talking about, whether it's abortion or, you know, whatever. There's just a myriad of topics that the government doesn't want you talking about. And using this kind of precedent where they are making an accusation against Bill, he has, you know, from 8 ways to Sunday documented that the 16th Amendment was fraudulently ratified. There's just no question about it. The evidence shows it. But the government is making these motions in court, and the judges are basically going along with them to prohibit Bill from at least making his case, right? To at least say, look at my evidence, and to show that I'm not lying.
Right.
So, anyway, we got a break coming up. Our guest is attorney Jeffrey Dickstein. His website is jeffdickstein.com. Hope you'll visit it during the break. And we'll be right back after these messages. Thanks for joining us.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
In 1987, some inner city first graders were promised a college education. Now, this promise didn't come from a wealthy corporation. It came from Oral Lee Brown, who saved a large portion of her modest income every year for these children.
Well, Ms. Brown, you can't do everything I said, no, but we need to do more.
And she did more by sending 19 kids to college, helping others. Pass it on.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
It's the truth that no one else will say on the radio.
The philosophy of Barack Obama is predicated on one simple notion, and that's that it's okay to take from one person to give to another.
It's okay to take from one person to give to another.
He's the evil conservative saying what America's thinking.
Barney Frank, Tim Geithner, Barack Obama, Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid. I want to know who's controlling these Muppets. Who's controlling these Muppets?
Truth to power.
It's the truth that no one else will say on the radio.
Only one man can do it, the evil conservative.
Listen, it'd be really easy to get rid of all the questions. Just show us the birth certificate.
He's the evil conservative.
Listen, sometimes somebody just has to say, it's an ugly baby.
Get it right.
Yes, the evil truth.
The evil conservative saying what America's thinking.
Weeknights at 10 on Liberty Works Radio Network, on Blog Talk Radio, and on the Eagle.
Several months ago, I watched as Sarah Palin delivered an inspiring speech to the nation, and I was proud to be a conservative. Today's celebration reminds me of just how blessed I am to be an American. When I was given the opportunity to compete in the Tropicana Speech Contest, I knew that I would write about something dear to me, my freedom. My speech is entitled America's Freedom and is dedicated to my great-grandmother Lev, who recently passed away at the age of 95. What do you think about when I say the word freedom? Some think about America being a free country, and others just think about having rights and being free. You probably think this speech is about freedom, but no. It is about how Americans are slowly losing their freedoms. My parents have taught me to love my country, and I appreciate the blood that was shed for our freedom. From the beaches of Normandy to the sands of Iraq, Americans have paid a great price so we could live free. Sadly, many among us just don't seem to care about the sacrifice it took to build this great nation. It seems as though we are more interested in our own pleasures than preserving our independence and liberties. Truth is, there's many who want to change our way of life, who don't respect the great traditions of America. These are the same people who support the growing attack upon our private property in the name of environmental protection, or the recent talk of limiting free speech with the Fairness Doctrine. Now, there's a twist for you. How can it be fair if the people don't get to choose for themselves? Where is the freedom in that? Then who continually attempt to shoot down our right to bear arms promised by the Second Amendment. On a personal level, we've seen independence, self-reliance, and individual responsibility replaced with complacency and apathy. Today, many of our schools don't teach the values and patriotic pride that my parents were taught just a few years ago. Yet, a price may have been paid on the battlefield, but the war is far from over. If we don't act now, before it's too late, we won't have any freedoms left. And America will no longer be the America we know and love. John Adams said it best when he wrote, "A constitution of government once changed from freedom can never be restored. Liberty once lost is lost forever." I believe we have a patriotic responsibility to stand up to those who seek to destroy these constitutional freedoms. If you believe in the values and principles that made this nation great, and if you enjoy the freedoms we have as Americans, then join me. Join me in standing up to those who seek to destroy these freedoms. Join me in taking back this great nation and protecting our independence and liberties. Because you can make a difference. I can make a difference. And together, we will make a difference. Thank you, and God bless.
Now live from coast to coast and around the globe, more real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. My name is Joe Bannister, your host. Website is freedomabovefortune.com. Our guest is attorney Jeffrey Dickstein. He's been talking about various cases he's defended over the years, including my own. And we are talking primarily about the Bill Denson case. And I want to spend this segment, we'll have one more segment after this, but I really want to spend this segment, about 12 to 14 minutes, on just the bottom line, Jeff. I mean, where you stand right now, how critical this point in time is, what you're doing right now in the case, what your immediate plans are for the future of the case, and, what kind of support that you need.
The Seventh Circuit, I did a petition for reconsideration there that was denied. So on October 16th of this year, little less than 2 weeks from now, we are filing a petition for writ of certiorari with the United States Supreme Court, and we're asking them to review the denial of due process, to review the First Amendment issues, and asking them to declare that the abuse of tax shelter statute is itself unconstitutional when used to suppress political speech. You can read that petition. I've spent about 200 or so hours on it, writing it. I've revised it completely 3 times and modified it numerous times. But the final product has been sent to the printer, and you can see that on the website, jeffdickstein.com. There's a link at the top of the page that says petition for writ of certiorari, and if you click on that, it'll take you right to the petition so you can read it yourself. In connection with that, we are building a website, and on the day that I filed the petition with the Supreme Court, the 16th, I'll be sending out an action alert to all the groups that I can reach, asking them to send the action alert to everybody on their mailing list. And the purpose of the mailing list is, or the action alert is, there'll be a link to this website we're building that you can click on, and then very easily and safely you can type in your name and address and automatically send letters not only to the members of Congress but to numerous TV stations, radio stations, and newspapers. And the goal here is to gain sufficient political support and make this a newsworthy event so that political pressure is put on the Supreme Court to agree to hear the case. So that's what we're working on now. I came up with the website design. I've been representing Bill for free for the last 3 years because he ran out of money some time ago. And so everything we do off donations. And we received enough money to pay for the printing, pay for the filing fee at the Supreme Court. I've hired a webmaster in Alaska who at a ridiculously low price has agreed to build the website. And then I've also hired a courtroom artist to do some sketches which will graphically depict the Bill Denson case and make it really, really simple for the people to understand. I mean, you can get really bogged down in the technical issues, but I've come up with this sort of like a cartoon that'll really graphically portray what's going on. We've designed a logo of Uncle Sam flushing the Constitution down the toilet. I'm hoping to turn that into bumper stickers and t-shirts. So really now focusing on the public awareness aspect of this case, because if the people don't get involved, the Supreme Court won't hear the case, and then freedom as we know it in America will be lost forever.
And I mean, in a nutshell, the government's accusing an American of lying, of you know, saying something false, and then preventing him from providing his story, basically his position, to prove that he's telling the truth.
Right.
And that could happen to any American talking, whether they're talking about a medical issue, vaccines, they're blowing the whistle on anything, some local or state agency or other business or whatever, you will not be able to prove that you're telling the truth, and the allegation against you that you're lying is going to stick because you have no way to defend yourself.
Yeah, conclusive presumption. Significantly, the Supreme Court has specifically ruled that you can't use a conclusive presumption against somebody accused of wrongdoing. And the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals and the District Court in Chicago has just thumbed their nose at the Supreme Court, and that's precisely what they're doing. They're using a conclusive presumption of guilt and precluding you from defending yourself.
It
is atrocious.
Is conclusive presumption like the antithesis of due process, basically? Because in due process, there's an arbiter and there's both sides giving their side of things, whereas conclusive presumption is that there's no debate, there's no argument, there's no adversarial conflict. It's just conclusively presumed.
Yeah, you lose. The government's position is the only position to be considered by the court, regardless of what that position is, regardless of whether it's right or wrong. It's ideological conformity. You either accept our word on the subject or you're going to suffer consequences. It's our way or the highway, basically. We've seen that before in history. I mean, there was a radical guy by the name of Galileo who had the audacity to invent the telescope and look through it. And he discovered that the official ecclesiastical position that the Earth was the center of the universe was wrong. And so he wrote a book on the subject matter, and the Inquisition decided he was guilty as a matter of law, and they found him guilty. Well, we all know what the truth of that was. He was absolutely right. The government was wrong. But they precluded him from defending himself. And history has shown just how dangerous that position is. But that's exactly what the government is attempting to go back to. And it's just that serious. So that was like in the 1600s. So despite the Revolutionary War, despite the Bill of Rights, despite a lot of us having gone into the military to protect the American way of life, the government is going right back to what they used to do, which is to be in total, absolute control and to enslave us all to their point of view, whether we agree with it or not, which isn't the important thing, but whether it's right or wrong, which is critically important.
And the concept of government, you know, by, for, and of the people is obviously flushed down the toilet too, because if it's the government dictating what the truth will be rather than the facts and the evidence, then you can't very well say that you have a government, you know, of, by, and for the people.
No, it's a complete trashing of the Constitution and the American way of life and everything that this country was supposedly stands for.
Well, I don't want to gloss over what you said a few minutes ago, and that is, I think you mentioned a couple hundred hours just on the petition to the Supreme Court itself, but I'm sure that there are thousands of hours not compensated or compensated at a fraction, a pittance, of what you would need to survive. And, you know, I certainly know that in my own case, how patient you were, and, you know, you're an attorney, unlike many, where, you know, your job one is to defend your client, and then you worry about your own food and shelter later. And it's astounding. I wish more people were like that, but I just want the listeners to know that this is really serious business. This is something that affects each and every one of us. This is a huge issue. It's now going to be going to the U.S. Supreme Court to hope that they will take the case. And we need to generate as much publicity and interest in this case to let the entire American populace know that this affects all of us. But I'd also like you to remember that Jeff Dickstein is doing this work, and, you know, he'd like to be compensated. I mean, we all like to be compensated for the work we do, but it's few and far between. So I know this is a difficult economy, but, you know, even if you send a couple bucks, if enough people do it, it really does help. So send what you can. Jeff had given me the address. Now, he gave you the website before, jeffdickstein.com. That's JeffDickstein, jeffdickstein.com. Mailing address for Jeff, for those who may not be on the internet, is 500 West Bradley Road, apartment C as in Charlie, C-208, Fox Point, that's two words, Fox Point, Wisconsin, 53217. That's 500 West Bradley Road, apartment C as in Charlie, -208, Fox Point, Wisconsin, 53217. You can email Jeff at jdlaw and then the numeral 1. So J as in Jeff, D as in Dickstein, law, L-A-W, the numeral 1 at wi.rr.com.
There's a link on the website that you can click on to make a donation through PayPal. Tried to make it as easy as possible. And then folks who don't use PayPal, you can just send a check, cash, or money order to my address.
Yes, and I did bring up the petition that you're going to be filing with the Supreme Court. Looks like it's 43 pages long.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, I just can't even imagine what that must be like to get together a petition to the United States Supreme Court. Now, that's not the first time you've done that, correct?
I've gone to the Supreme Court a couple of times on other issues, but I didn't spend anywhere near the time that I spent on this one. This one has to be perfect, and I believe it is. Put in, like I say, a lot of hours writing it and rewriting it and revising it to where it now says exactly what I wanted to say. Presents the issues clearly and concisely and simply. I wrote it not only for the Supreme Court, but so the American public can read it and understand what's going on. And that took some extra work because you write differently, you know, when you're addressing one group of people as opposed to another. But this had to cut across all the boundaries and appeal to everyone. And so it was pretty work intensive.
really poured your heart and soul and just every ounce of your experience and training over all these decades.
I did 15 hours a day for about a month.
Incredible.
Efficient.
Well, we have one more segment after this. Our guest is attorney Jeffrey Dickstein, and we'll be right back.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
The entire world watched. They watched each step down the rungs of that small ladder, one after another, and waited with great anticipation for that last step.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
At that moment, humanity saw the impossible become the possible, and today the sky is not the limit. Achievement, pass it on.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Is Liberty Works Radio Network enlightening you to the real problems we face in our constitutional republic? Has it helped you to better understand what has to be done to save America from becoming a third world nation? If so, do your part in spreading this voice of truth and enlightenment to your fellow Americans. Join the Liberty Works Radio Network Fellowship. Go to www.libertyworksradionetwork.com for details.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting. America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network.
There's a reason education s***, because the owners of this country don't want that. I'm talking about the real owners now. It's the big, wealthy business interests that control things and make all the important decisions. Forget the politicians. They're irrelevant. The politicians are put there to give you the idea that you have freedom of choice. You don't. You have no choice. You have owners. They own you. They own everything. They own all the important land. They own and control the corporations. They've long since bought and paid for the Senate, the Congress, the state houses, the city halls. They got the judges in their back pockets. And they own all the big media companies, so they control just about all of the news and information you get to hear. They got you by the They spend billions of dollars every year lobbying to get what they want. Well, we know what they want. They want more for themselves and less for everybody else. But I'll tell you what they don't want. They don't want a population of citizens capable of critical thinking. They don't want well-informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking. They're not interested in that. That doesn't help them. That's against their interest. That's right. You know something? They don't want people who are smart enough to sit around the kitchen table and figure out how badly they get by a system that threw them overboard. They don't want that. You know what they want? They want obedient workers. Obedient workers. People who are just smart enough to run the machines and do the paperwork and just dumb enough to passively accept all these increasingly jobs with the lower pay, the longer hours, the reduced benefits, the end of overtime, and the vanishing pension that disappears the minute you go to collect it. And now they're coming for your Social Security money. They want your retirement money. They want it back so they can give it to their criminal friends on Wall Street.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Overcome. Pass it on. When Marlon Shirley was 5 years old, he was in an accident and lost his foot, but he didn't lose his heart.
When you tackle a challenge that you just cannot even fathom tackling, when you accomplish that,
the amount of integrity and the will and the heart that you'll get from that experience is what will set you up for your life.
In less time than it took Marlon Shirley to say that, he can now run 100 meters because today he's the world's fastest amputee. Overcome. Pass it on.
America. Born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Now live from coast to coast and around the globe, more real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. My name is Joe Bannister, your host. FreedomAboveFortune.com is the website. Also, go to LWRN.net for information about the Liberty Works Radio Network. Our guest today has been
Attorney Jeffrey Dickstein. And during the break, Jeff was talking to me about an interesting issue relating to the 16th Amendment, Bill Benson, but also a case in the 11th Circuit. The case that Jeff's been talking about is in the 7th Circuit, which would be like Illinois. Tell the listeners, Jeff, about the circuits and how that all works, and then dovetail into what's going on in the 11th Circuit.
Well, there's federal district courts in all of the states. A lot of states have three or four of them. And then the Court of Appeals system is where there's a Court of Appeals that encompasses the area of several different states. So, like, the Seventh Circuit is Chicago, Illinois, Indiana, Wisconsin. The Eleventh Circuit is down covering the Florida, Georgia, that area. Well, Bill Benson spoke at a group called Pinnacle Quest International. What they did is they put out a series of tapes, or CDs, 21 set, discussing a lot of issues. And then they also sold tickets to attend seminars where people would speak about those issues. And one of the people who spoke was Bill Benson on the 16th Amendment. And so the Department of Justice came out with an injunction suit against them, which they won. And then they filed criminal charges. And the criminal charges was that the PQI defendants, I represent two, there's a total of 13, were engaging in anti-government propaganda, including that the 16th Amendment wasn't ratified. They put it right in the indictment. And so I filed all of Bill Benson's material in that case, arguing that the 16th Amendment wasn't ratified, and asked the court to rule on that. And the court did the same thing. The court ignored our arguments because of the conclusive presumption. And so I'm preparing a petition for writ of mandamus to go up to the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals to force the district court judge to answer the specific questions that we raised regarding how an amendment is ratified and whether the courts have jurisdiction to hear that. And what a mandamus is, it's an order from one court directing a lower court to do something. And so I'm going to file that on Monday with a pretty clear idea that the 11th Circuit is going to deny it. And then I'm going to be able to take their denial up to the Supreme Court. So I'll have the same issue pending in both the civil case and a criminal case. I've really worked hard at setting up the timing on this. So both cases should be at the Supreme Court at the same time.
Do you think that, as long as the Supreme Court has been around, that they coordinate and, you know, the right hand knows what the left hand is doing, that they somehow classify these different cases and they become aware fairly rapidly that there's, you know, similar issues present in the cases?
Yeah, I'm sure, because if you study the rulings of the Supreme Court, they oftentimes consolidate several cases that are addressing similar issues. And it's actually a tactic to get several different cases on the same issue up there at the same time.
So I see.
I've studied that process and am attempting to implement it here.
I see. And that's also why it's so important that everyone listening needs to participate when you get ready to do this action alert, correct?
Yeah. You know, the more noise we can make, I mean, that's what happens in today's society, is there has to be a newsworthy event. As much as the media may not want to address some of these issues, you know, because of who owns the media, they nonetheless report on the news, and if there's enough noise, they will cover it at least at some level. And so the goal is to get the people aware that this is going on, so they can put on the political pressure, so that the newspapers will publish it. The more it's published, then the more pressure gets put on the government to address the issue.
Has there been much publicity, say, in the last couple of years?
Well, it's hard to say, not specifically on this issue, but certainly the Ron Paul campaign has brought to light any number of issues and has actionalized a group of people. They're younger, but they're definitely involved now with all the Tea Party stuff, and I'm hoping to jump on their coattails and to gain the support of those people, because they're vocal and they're inclined to take action. Reminds me a little bit of the 60s and what went on, you know, when the kids, you know, they were called hippies then, but you know, they got involved in the anti-war movement, and of course the civil rights movement, both happened at the same time. And I think the country, because of the events with the economic crisis, the war in Iraq, are being lied to about the weapons of mass destruction, the government moving towards communism as they start taking over private industry like the automobile industry and healthcare. I think that it's a similar time in history to where we may actually get something accomplished here.
That would sure be wonderful. And you know, the fact that the 11th Circuit does encompass Florida, and I know that's where we have a lot of listeners, a lot of loyal listeners in Florida, so this that would actually directly affect Floridians. As far as what the decisions in the 11th Circuit are, and once the Supreme Court were to take on the case, then of course it would have effect for all of us. But
the interesting thing about this case is that if the income tax goes away, of course Congress can pass another law to collect taxes that they need, but the short-term effect is every payday, every working American is going to have a 15% to 30% increase in their paycheck. And I'm calling this the People's Alternative Recovery Act, because obviously the government efforts to stimulate the economy isn't working, but if everybody in America had another 15% to 30%, the economy's going to grow. They're going to be able to get their houses out of foreclosure. They're going to be able to pay their debts. There's going to be more jobs created. So, I mean, this is a totally grassroots campaign where we're going to fix, or we have the potential to fix, what government has failed miserably at. And it's power to the people. You know, it's our country. We don't have to put up with going trillions of dollars in debt. Why don't we just fix it at the grassroots level? And that's what this, that's a benefit of this litigation and making the income tax go away, is we'll fix the economy and we'll do it virtually overnight.
Well, I couldn't agree more, and I picked up on that. You mentioned the C word, communism, and you know, I'm 46, and you're, you know, a few years older than me. But there used to be a time when we, you know, Americans were just deathly afraid of a system being implemented that looked like the Soviet Union, you know, or looked like Cuba. And I mean, wake up, people! It's, you know, the noose is practically around our neck and tightening up to where we can't get out. It's happening all around us in the taxation, in the courts, in the you know, this conclusive presumption that Jeff talks about. This is the Sovietization of America, where you have no due process, you have no rights. What the government says goes, and you have no property, you have no ability to better yourself. You know, wake up. This is happening in every segment of American society. And of course,
well, yeah, we have East German-like checkpoints at the airports now. What do you need? You need traveling papers and official government documents, and everybody is subject to search.
Yeah.
You know, when I was growing up, they used to depict the East German checkpoints as one of the biggest threats of communism. Every spy movie you saw, every other movie you saw, what did they show? They showed what happened at the checkpoints. Well, they're here in America now. How can that happen under the Fourth Amendment?
It is, it's astounding. And there's always these pretexts that occur, like the guy that has a, you know, bomb in his shoe, and so now we have to take off our shoes, you know, to get through the checkpoint. And I think I read that there either already has occurred, or they're afraid that will occur, is somebody will try to put a bomb-making material in their body, you know, like inside. They'll swallow it like the drug mules swallow cocaine, and then that will require us to have a full-body scan. You know, there's just a pretext after pretext after pretext to lead us down this road to tyranny. And we're already way down the road, my friends. So we need to band together and wake up and support people on the front lines like Jeff Dickstein. So Jeff, in the closing couple minutes, I'd like to just go back over your contact information. Again, Jeff could use some assistance financially. His first priority is defending his client, and that case really is about all of us, not just Bill Benson. So any amount of support that you can send to Jeff, certainly prayers are appreciated, but some financial contributions would be extremely helpful. Jeff's email address, well, first of all, the website is jeffdickstein.com, jeffdickstein.com. You can go and actually see the petition. It's going to be filed with the U.S. Supreme Court within the next couple of weeks. And Jeff's mailing address is 500 West Bradley Road, apartment C as in Charlie, -208, Fox Point, Wisconsin. Fox Point is two words. Fox Point, Wisconsin, 53217. And let's see, did I forget anything else, Jeff?
No, I think that's it. I want to encourage people to look out for this email alert that'll be going out on October 16th. I'm hoping to get national coverage of that. We're going to the Ron Paul groups and the Tea Party groups and sending it to them and asking them to forward it. So hopefully it'll be viral and it'll spread. When you get it, we're making it extremely simple, to where you can go to one place and inside of maybe 10 seconds or maybe a little more, 30 seconds, type in your name and address, and automatically at no charge to you, send out letters and emails and faxes to the newspapers, TV stations, radio stations, as well as the members of Congress. If we don't do it, it's not going to get done. You know, it is a country of we the people. But it's up to the people to take action. If we do nothing, we get nothing. And it's time to get off the fence, and it's time to take an active stance, and this will be a safe, easy way to do it.
Couldn't agree more. Well, yeah, everybody, get on the mailing list. Get on my mailing list at freedomabovefortune.com, or go to jeffdickstein.com and get on his mailing list. Get on the mailing list. You're ready for this October 16th action alert. We all have to join together, and please support Jeff in any way you can in this effort. Thanks very much.
One thing is, I don't actually have a mailing list. I don't collect email
Liberty
addresses.
Liberty Works Radio Network.
The American Dream was nurtured in the beginning by Thomas Jefferson, one of the greatest defenders of liberty in our history. It was Jefferson's words in the Declaration of Independence that proclaimed God's plan for government to be ordained. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. He clearly understood that history has proven government to be the tool of the greedy and the power hungry. That mankind, seeking safety, is forever falling into the trap of total reliance on government. He warned, "It is error alone that needs the support of government. Truth can stand by itself."
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcast. America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
It's not easy being a veteran.
Coming back from Iraq or Afghanistan, not everyone understands that.
You don't feel the same.
Join us at communityofveterans.org and connect to others who are going through the same thing.
Because no one knows what it's like to come back unless they were there.
Brought to you by Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America.
I know what you're going through.
I've been there.
I pledge allegiance to the Constitution of the American States United and to the Republic which it created, implementing God's governmental plan for man and asking his blessing for its observance, which will provide liberty and justice for all, for all, for all, for all.
Hey everybody, gather around. I'm here to give you anything you like. You want free college, energy, mortgages, whatever you like. You have come to the right place. Why? I'll tell you why. Who can take your money?
Who can take your money?
With a twinkle in their eye.
A twinkle in their eye.
Take it all away and give it to some other guy. The government.
The government.
The government can.
The government can.
And who can tax the sunrise?
Who can tax the sunrise?
Who can tax the trees?
Who can tax the trees?
Let you run a business and collect up all the fees. The government.
The government.
Oh, the government can.
The government can.
And the government can, cause they mix it up with lies and make it all taste good. To pay for all of their solutions, healthcare, climate change, pollution, throw away the Constitution. And who can give a bailout?
Who can give a bailout?
Tell us to behave.
Tell us to behave.
And make the founding fathers roll over in the grave. The government. Soon we'll have to eat our dishes.
Delicious.
Oh, who can be a failure?
In so many ways.
Instead of getting fired, hey, we'll give ourselves a raise. The government.
show.